This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, guys, here we are. Well, we want to introduce everybody around the table, even though there are new members, so that we can get today started. And the first business today is the election of the UA Executive Committee member, Marty Hatch, as interim chair, temporary chair. That would be only for the period of the item number two, which is the election of the UA chair. So I, being one who's being elected, want to ask if there is why don't you ask?
So I'll move that we have Marty serve as the temporary chair for the election of the chair.
Second.
Okay. Do you want to just say? Is there any objections? None. Being none, we'll proceed with that. All right. Now, I'm going to follow the order that Jim Blair brought to our attention. It was actually on the Dropbox for the UA. So, that is as follows. We're in closed session.
Turning now to the last order, or the order, first order of new business of the day, a preliminary discussion of the Outdoor Space Working Group. The last year it was chaired by Mr. Blair, the former chair, with a number of members from the University Assembly on it. Its report was released over the summer and summarily adopted by President Garrett. We'd like to have a discussion about the outcome of it, as well as next steps the Assembly may continue to take. With that, we turn to Mr. Hatch to discuss that.
Yes. Midsummer, there was an email note from the from Joel Molina's office conveying the fact that President Garrett wanted to announce the results of the Outdoor Space Working Group deliberations about questions of time, place, and manner of public demonstrations, campus demonstrations. And the report was forwarded to us then and put in the Dropbox. Yes?
Actually, you received it from the president with her request to respond prior to the whole.
Oh, okay. We
received it earlier in the summer.
Right.
And then
June 22nd. Or July 22nd it came to us. Right. July 22nd. I had forgotten it was directly from the president. I thought it was from Joel's office. But okay, that's great. Then subsequently this month, we had some discussion of this in the four-person executive committee. And it was thought that because the president's suggestion in her letter, now I'm remembering it correctly, I'm not very prepared for this, was that we take one portion of this report, Appendix C, which outlines the minimal set of rules related to outdoor space, and insert it, was the word, I think, into the campus code of conduct. And some people in the executive committee, there seemed to be consensus that we couldn't literally insert it without the process of the Code of the Judicial Committee reviewing the report, deciding what portions were relevant to the to be added to the campus code that's presently written, rather than just to insert a group of comments that were decided upon or statements were decided upon. So we didn't write a formal letter back to the president, and then a month later we got a request from Joe Molina in the University Relations Office to take some action on it, get it into place one way or another, because the president wanted to announce the results of the working group. We then did write back a response, at least I believe it's just one or two of us wrote back a response saying that we didn't see how that could happen without the normal process of the Code and Judicial Committee considering it and the UA deciding that certain aspects needed to be included in the code. They're added into the code or even having a response that said, we don't accept some of these things. That's also a possibility because the Code and Judicial Committee is in charge of the code. So we then got a request for a meeting with the Joe Molina's office and a representative from the University Counsel's office, at which the four of us, the four executives, expressed our concern or our particular position on this. And I'll just cut to the chase and what was said in the meeting, which was basically everything that's in this outdoor space recommendation is already university policy. It's just that this minimal set of rules related to outdoor space was being fielded as a kind of a way of reminding people or having it in a kind of quintessential form in the code, the recommendation, so that everything having to do with demonstrations on the campus followed the time, place, and manner regulations that were already a part of university policy. There was some discussion about a couple of sentences in this. One was, events must comply with applicable laws, regulations, and university policies. And the question was, what university policy? That was immediately, I guess, that was laid to rest when you consider that if there already are university policies about the various matters, classes, and so forth, cannot be disrupted. Individuals and groups have a right to engage in protests, but no one may substantially interfere with another speaker's right to be heard. If these are all matters of policy, then basically all that this sentence, events must comply with applicable laws, regulations, and university policies, is a kind of just affirmation of the fact that it wouldn't. But at the end it said the university maintains the right to define additional time, place, and manner restrictions in furtherance of its educational and research mission and to ensure the safety of the university community and its members. The present code of conduct stipulates that the president can, from time to time, issue regulations that are different from what is in the code. But that maybe has the appearance that it is a emergency measure or something that's required for a specific event, as opposed to defining additional restrictions, which could be seen as something that's longer term. That is, we're going to add this policy, we're going to add these restrictions to behavior. I don't know whether that's been completely adjudicated, but it may well be that that will come out later. But I think at the end of the session, it was generally accepted by everyone around the table that because most of what is in this appendix is already, if not all of it, on university policy, there is not a necessity for us to take any action on it as a Code and Judicial Committee, at least at this stage, or as a university assembly. And so we just allowed the process of the president saying that these rules for outdoor space have been written down, but they already exist. Maybe I don't know what the date should be,
but we'll hear it in the next week or two. It's sufficient that everybody is forewarned or everybody is assured that these things are in place, these policies are in place, these restrictions are already in the general code of behavior, I guess you could say, and enforceable in the character code. I think that's what I'm going to say. But Greg, you may want to add something. Anybody else? Greg was at the meeting, and he was former chair of the campus social judicial committee.
He is the new chair as well.
And he's the new chair.
Yeah, so I've been on the campus. This will be my fourth year and my third year as chair. Two of my years as chair were spent looking at protest language and spending a lot of time going back and forth, having a lot of discussion, community discussion. I think one of the reasons it came back to the UA last year when it took the stance that it did the last UA body, consensus or resolution or outcome wasn't really going to be reached in the TJC, and recommendations and changes to the code weren't going to come through. And I think that that's why the senior leadership at the university level really decided to take it within their purview, which is outlined in the code, to adopt policy and make some of these changes policy to reiterate and organize the really sort of the themes already existing in the code and reiterate them in policy. So I think it was great that the Joel Molina's office and the president engaged us and shared with us in advance the communication so we could start to have a dialogue and discussion about it. In my personal opinion, I don't know if there's necessarily an issue to be brought up. But again, I serve as a pleasure of the assembly, so if that's said to be otherwise, I'm happy to take upon the TJC to look at it. But I think that this issue has been vetted. This is the decision. And there's plenty of other work that needs to be done in the code and around campus for us to take up. So I think that that would be my position. Slowly speaking from my four years of experience here at the
Professor Love. Okay. So let me get this straight. The policies that Marty talked about are already in the code.
Yeah.
Enforceable by
largely, yes. So why are they doing this? Why don't they just refer to the code? What is the point of having another policy paper, but just the PR? It's already in the code. They reiterate that, we want to remind you that in the campus code comments. I don't like it, though. That's the only thing we have. That's the only thing the University Assembly has jurisdiction over, the campus code. I don't see anybody messing with things that are in the campus code or should be in the campus code. So even if we just vote on it at the next meeting and it's read, we shouldn't just let them go through with it.
Our campus code gives them the authority, though, to do that, to make policy changes from time to time. And that's what they've done.
I will also say that to expound on what Mr. Mendez said, the code does say that the administration from time to time, especially the president, can promulgate additional reasonable time, place, manner restrictions that are consistent with what has been expressed in the code. And the working group that promulgated this, or that wrote the report, was staffed by the UA. Mr. Blair was the chair of it. I believe, Mr. Mendez, you were on as well.
It was not staffed by the UA.
Or, it was one of correction. We had members on it. I should be working with it.
I might be able to, if I may. I think just the council's office sent around to the interim exec yesterday a clarification of very specifically the part of the code that is referenced. The code has not been changed arbitrarily, unilaterally, without proper process.
Well, it hasn't changed at all.
That's correct. I'm just reaffirming the fact that Alex's concern that nothing has changed. The working group, part of the charge of the working group was a lot of these policies regarding outdoor space use, whether it was the local use of space policies or where can you use a megaphone and where can't you, was to bring it all up so that there is a place now where all of these things can be accessed. And in the process, it was dusting off the places in the code that already exist. And the place in the code where this exists she wasn't even thinking about it on Friday, but it was subsequent to that, that there is a, Title IV of the code, violations, where it says it shall be a violation of this title, blah, 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 and at the very end, to fail to comply with any time, place, and manner regulation authorized by Article III of Title I, and Article III of the protest. So it already had the provision in there. They're just adopting these recommendations to kind of do what you just said. Point out where these rules and regulations already exist.
Well, her purpose was to answer the question of whether or not, this was a question actually Jim posed to us all when I wrote to him in July with that request. And he said that, in fact, the staff and faculty were not, he didn't believe, covered in this by these regulations. And he wanted to have it in the code, some kind of discussion, because that would allow coverage for the faculty and staff. Ms. Steschler, who's the counsel who was there, her response was how they were enforced not formally incorporated in the code. They would have jurisdiction over faculty and staff in the same way that the code does have jurisdiction over faculty and staff. Any failure to comply with duly promulgated university policy will be a violation of the code. So the question is, if everything in this group of minimal set of rules is already a university policy, use of public address systems is amplified sound permitted without prior approval during the hours of 12 and 1. If that's university policy, the question is.
That's a local use of space policy. For example, right now in the DO student office.
Okay.
That if you want to use amplified sound on Pope Plaza, you have to go through the event registration form and get permission to do that. This is now elevating it to a place where people know that.
Okay.
Question of supersedence came in, and that's why the recommendations from this working group were put in the code. That way everybody knows where to find them. Otherwise, an individual would have to go to the Dean of Students Office regulations or wherever these might take place.
So what, Greg, your recommendation was that we not touch it for another month or two, or another, I think if it's going to be in the code, in a place, one way or the other, one place or the other, then the CJC should really be charged with looking at them and saying, do they belong?
Speakers just would have time if you want, or if they have any comment. Okay, I'm sorry, then next would be Mr. Trump.
Yeah, just to clarify, that the campus code of conduct leaves it somewhat open to the president to define more clearly the time and place restrictions on campus protests. And the university did everything right here in assembling the working group for the outdoor space recommendation. And this isn't a policy that they just came up with out of nowhere and put into policy. They literally adopted exactly Appendix C from the outdoor space working group's recommendation. The reason this was presented to us to be put into the code of conduct explicitly was to increase the awareness of the specific policies relating to campus protests. But then the concern that was raised during the meeting was that if these recommendations from Appendix C were shuttled back through the CJC, even though they were created by a diverse working group assembled of representatives from many different groups on campus, that they would not make it into the campus code with exactly the same language that they currently have, which is current policy, and that would lead to more confusion rather than less when it came to.
If I may, we do have a speaker's list. But the question for the Assembly is, do we wish to send this to the CJC for consideration? And also from the media on Friday, it was said that if the CJC were to make small alterations, as it very likely would, then there would have to be a discussion between the University Assembly, who would have proposed the changes, and the President's office, if the slight changes are acceptable. Because by accepting, the President would not accept a resolution from the UA that would create an internal conflict within the code and other policies. For the sheer sake of it, Mr. Kaufman, you had a comment?
Yeah, I just had a quick question. So this wouldn't really affect how the JA handles the infringements of the campus code of conduct?
It would not. We get that clarification from the council.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay.
Mr. Jeremy, is that?
Just to clarify, I'm just going to read this. The time, place, and manner is from Stephanie Kessler of the Office of the Council. The time, place, and manner restrictions are enforceable under the code as university policy under Title IV, Article 2A, which she added to you. She highlighted it. So there's no need to formally incorporate them into the code in order to create an enforceable mechanism. Anybody, faculty, staff, or student violating the time, place, or manner restrictions would be subject to sanctions through the existing JA process, just like any other code violation. But if you'd like, I can certainly share it in a very specific campus code.
We received a request specifically from President Gary asking us to consider incorporating the code, which is why we were discussing that stress at all.
I don't think faculty go to the JA. Things that have to do with faculty and staff do not go to JA. Anything that goes to the faculty goes to my dean. Does not, if I'm out doing something and I have an infringement of the code, I don't go to the Mary Beth Norton, tell you right now. My dean jumps on me. So if it says something about going to JA, that's wrong.
The campus code of conduct is not a student campus code. And it's not the JA enforces the code. It's part of the judicial administrator's process is, because you're a faculty member, she's not going to call you into her office, because the policy or whatever the process is would involve whatever the
faculty process. Yeah, it was my understanding that she's not even involved, period. But certainly, when it came to, Red Bud, and it came to faculty, the JA is not involved at all. And I know the faculty said that my JA has nothing to do with it.
Well, it may have been that, any faculty that have their infringement, the first touch may be to her office, in which case she sends it over jurisdictionally. I don't know.
I wouldn't say argument, it's just that if that's what it said, then if something got put into the code, after I was chair of the JA.
I have the code pulled up right now, and it's specifically named university faculty, employees of the university or registered organizations and students who stand under the jurisdiction.
Well, they are under the jurisdiction, but the code's procedures are not being changed insofar as we're simply adding time, place, or the administration is simply adding time, place, manner restrictions. If whatever the code states for faculty is what the code is fragmented about, that is not changing. If it goes to the JA in some way and it goes to the dean, that's what's being done. This is not touching that. So whatever the code has jurisdiction over everyone on campus, but whatever specifically does for faculty is not included in it.
Well, there's nothing more than pulling things out of the existing red book, out of the code, and codifying in some separate document or something. That is no problem. But I would be absolutely against anybody other than us putting anything into the code without it being vetted through the code and judicial committee and looked at by the UA. That's the only thing we have, guys. We can't let anybody put anything in or do anything to it without our full review.
And nothing's changed the code.
That's fine. It's only if they want to become the end of the code, then that I would object to.
Thank you. Richard Smith, you had raised.
Yeah, actually both of you pretty much said that I was gonna say that my only thing to offer would be that I would make certain that we just sort of address and for actually handling violations and complaints are consistent in all groups. We ran into that before significantly to the point where I just went to announce to the point where Jay's office, like we removed all investigations from the Jay's office because of that. And for anybody, even students, the faculty, students, the staff, that there was such a conflict, that office and the workplace policy labor relations, selections of people for panels and all that type of stuff, that all that has not gone to workplace policy labor relations, their investigation.
Of what?
Of this work for this violation of 6.4 specifically questions.
I don't know the numbers. What is 6.4?
Prohibited discrimination, protected status, harassment, bias,
okay.
And sexual violence.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
So that's why my cautionary tale would be because the code has provisions where it gives the judicial administrator the authority to do interim measures and interim accommodations when a complaint comes up, but doesn't get workforce policy that relation by saying authority. That's the body handling the investigation and the data. So that's why they make sure that your whole process is consistent. Whether or not you're changing something in the code, we're going to highlight where policies are or things that are existing. You're going to make sure it's consistent. Because otherwise that will be a problem. It will be a problem.
That was the part. And I think that was strongly communicated by all board members at that room to Joel and Stephanie. I don't want to speak for others, but I think that was a strong piece of what we were trying to message.
Yeah, I think in the end, the word change was a bugaboo because I agree with Ellis. Any changes in the code have to go through that process. The folks in the room said it's not changes we're talking about, it's definition. Now, you know, sometimes there's a fine line of difference. In that difference, sometimes it may bleed over. One person's definition might be a change. And I guess I feel like I came out of the meeting thinking to allow this to not be settled until maybe another 2 or 3 months from now. But it should be considered by the Code Judicial Committee. That is what is going on, because there's a sentence in here that is really, and it brings to mind what Ellis had to say. It says, any failure to comply with a duly promulgated university policy is a violation of the code. And JAA is authorized to process both employees and faculty and so forth. I think there's a degree of vagueness about that question that should be just affirmed or it should be put to rest. But those kinds of things can be discussed later in another month or two. I'm glad we brought it up now, though.
Thank you, Mr. Ash. Professor Howard.
I just want to also second what Ellis has said. I think that the campus code is something that belongs to this group. We should take very seriously. I'm hearing some contradictory information in this discussion. I agree with Ellis. My understanding is that faculty misconduct is not going to be totally not there and then the verge of something to do it. So if they're making language changes there, that's a great concern to me. So I would request that we go very slowly and carefully with this.
Thank you. And just to respond to yours as well, which is a good point. Insofar as what this is being done is it's simply promulgating time, place, and manner restrictions as is allowed in the code. The structure of the code is not being amended because the UA has not spoken on it. We have been asked to look at it and consider incorporating it. That is an issue that the exec and the CDC will discuss. But insofar as faculty misconduct, whatever has been in the code since it was last modified or adopted on that, nothing is being changed.
So the language which just read by Professor Hatch.
That was because...
Well, I don't think it is in the code, so I think it was added.
That was in the email from University Council.
In the email from University Council, I don't think it's in the code. But maybe I'm wrong.
The discussion, and maybe to provide context, the discussion with University Council was how would this be enforced if it didn't fall under the code, the policy, how would enforcement powers come for students and others. And in this case, because we were talking, the context to my understanding was about students, it would fall under the purview of the JA's office. But the structure of the code for enforcement would be left untouched because the code has not been amended.
So the language which Professor Hatch just read, what's the purpose of that language?
Insofar as my understanding is to clarify the applicability of these new provisions to students and how they would be pushed through the judicial process.
But the language says faculty acceptance.
The JA would have jurisdiction over time, place, and manner violation, whether the alleged violator was student, faculty, or staff person.
I think it's, as Matthew just said, nothing in the code has changed. It is in the code that it applies to faculty. If your practice is different and how you're jurisdictionally treated, whatever that process is, it still exists as it did today, yesterday, last time the code was amended. What I think Alexander read from you is our current code includes faculty and employees.
Yeah, I'm looking at Title II, Article I, which is judicial jurisdiction. It says all violations of the campus code of conduct by a student, member of the university faculty, other employee of the university, or university-registered organization shall be processed through the campus judicial system, consistent with the principle stated in Article II of Title I, except as otherwise provided in Section C below.
So we say that oftentimes allow the college to use the verb process. That simply means kind of who receives the complaint and who reads it. That doesn't mean the complaint is resolved or the matter is resolved in the JA's office. JA typically does not get involved in matters that the complaint is. They just use on the receiving end of the complaint.
That's kind of contradicted right here where it says the JA would have jurisdiction, and that's the
university. Yes. But the same way,
to
the president
all complaints, all violations of the campus code would go to the JA. The JA then might send it to the dean of faculty.
And that also means that she has, or he, has jurisdiction, then that means that she could dismiss it without even having to go to my team, which is great, it's fine with me, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she could come up with a settlement agreement for you. That
right.
To your time.
Yeah, but I don't think my dean, I can tell you now that my dean would not accept anything that J.A. said if I did something like, you know, unless the student, I don't care what the J.A. said, you know, I'd be out of here.
It doesn't matter.
That would really
affect you. That's
not a
campus code. No, I understand that, but I never
did
that.
A little lost
there. Thank you. Mr. Kaufman.
My question.
Okay. Mr. Warren.
So, I think that in terms of the outdoor space working group, but in terms of how faculty are treated by the campus are separate issues, but it might be worth to refer to CJC whether or not that bears investigation. If that is not actually the practice that violations even go through the JA at all, and it truly is handled internally by the deans and the colleges, and it might bear consideration of separate issues, but sort of the orders of the day, I think decide if the outdoor space working group will be referred again to the CJC for the future.
Thank you, Mr. Walrath. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak?
One more comment. When the committee recommended last year, I mean, I have vague recollection of this, but can be clarified, to the UA, the Code Judicial Committee was asked to consider
prior notice of
protest. It took a stand on that?
The UA said no. We voted.
I know the UA said no, but I'm asking what the committee did.
The CJ,
I think it voted against it, and then it sent to the UA with a recommendation.
Sent to the UA the recommendation.
To vote against.
Yeah.
And we voted against it. Now, my question is, that prior notification wasn't university policy when the students, right?
Okay.
That was not university policy. In the same way that it is said that these things are university policy, like 1 hour of this and can't, you know, block an entrance and those kinds of things. Those are university policies, but prior notice was not a university policy, and that's why it was considered and sent to the...
Correct.
Okay. Also, it was permit. The language that got really tricky was the permit required.
Okay, so this came out of R9. From 2 years ago, and this was President Scorton's response
asking for, you know, would, if there's not to be a permit, would the CJC and the UA consider
right.
including language about prior advance notice
right.
just as a, hey, we're coming,
courtesy.
A courtesy, a heads up, and the CJC, and I think, and I don't, again, speak on behalf of the UA, that's a look back to a minute, my sense was that it was, it didn't feel that sort of that loose
right.
idea of a heads up was appropriate for the code.
Right, I guess what I'm saying is that makes me think that at some point the CJC should look at Appendix C in the same way that it looked at these other things, and rather than taking the word of the University Council's office as Augustus A. maybe and the President's office, that it to decide whether or not that is the case with all of the things in Appendix C. I like to put that on the floor as an option for a month or two from now, when the inauguration's done, that we really take seriously these concerns and look strongly at those things. And frankly, I would suggest that we get a council. When we rewrote the code 10 years ago, when I was the chair of the CJC at that time, and we had three representatives of Cornell Law School on our committee, as well as a Cornell, two of them were students, one was a Cornell faculty member. Did a lot of the writing, Cornell Law faculty member. And it was, we benefited immensely from that. So I would suggest this to CJC, to our chair, that we have that, somebody look at it.
I just want to reiterate for everybody that the outdoor space working group convened by President Gordon included a very broad representation, including here at the council, Chester Stewart, Greg, Chester, Chief Zoner, undergrad graduates.
Right.
It was very well composed. They worked hard to come up with this,
right.
even though. And so it's not the University Council, I'm not disagreeing with you, I think you're quite right to do due diligence, but the recommendations that came out of this that you see that are being discussed now as attachment C were deliberated and discussed by all corners representatives from the university. So it didn't come out of the council's office. It
right.
came out of the working group.
Right.
So to make sure that everybody's aware that not
right.
a university administration
decree.
First of all,
did you put that as a motion?
Well, I just, the recommendation to the chair of the CJC, if you want to make it a motion, you can.
Yeah, I think, you know, a full code review this year is where we really should be spending the time, because we've been in this section for 3 years, and I think that there's some parts of the code that have been missed, and I think that using this spirit in mind, looking at the completeness of the code and any other issues that may change. I think this should be one of a list of topics, but should not be the formal charge to the CJC for this year, but should be included in the considerations of many other topics as well.
If I may, in the next meeting on Tuesday, I will have a presentation and we will discuss the charges to the committees as well as a plan, because we have follow-up from last year's resolutions that we would need to continue through. There was the Community Bill of Rights working group where that idea was put through a resolution, so we need to determine where we'd like to go, as well as follow-up from various other actions and things from last year. So next week we'll have a more formalized discussion of what the various committees are being charged with by the Assembly to look into for this semester and this academic year. Any other comments or any other things you'd like to say? That being said, the next last item on our agenda is other discussion. If anyone else would have any items they'd like to bring to the Assembly or discuss briefly and what time we have left, I open the floor to that.
Marty had asked mention in the UA charter about any time that there is a search committee convened for most of the things the office and the agency or the judicial administrator, that the president would allow the UA to appoint somebody, which is correct, and that has been brought up. So there is not yet a search committee formed, but a UA member would could also be some point in the time.
I presume this is for the judicial administrator vacancy.
Okay.
And for members who aren't aware, former J.A. Mary Beth Brand has moved on to a new position in the Dean of Students office. Her associate, is currently serving as interim J.A. pending a search, of which the UA would partake in, and then the UA would confirm the whoever the search had, or the UA would discuss and then eventually confirm whoever the search pick. That is something that will be coming down the pike, and the CDC will also be looking at that. But that being said, is there anything else anyone would like to discuss? Mr. Crawford.
Quick question, because I wasn't here last year. Was the Resolution 9 that established the working group for the Community Bill of Rights?
I believe so, but I probably do have the idea on that.
Okay, because I've been talking to some students, and apparently a few students are under the impression that we've already started staffing that working group, and I'm pretty sure we haven't, so if anyone can fill me in on that.
Insofar as the University Assembly is concerned, the University Assembly Working Group, the interim summer exec, unless I missed something, has not heard anything about this. Now that we've constituted a full exec and we have a CJC chair, it will come under the CJC, so it'll be the UA exec and then Mr. Menzi will determine the best way to carry out the working group as requested in the resolution. But insofar as we've had our election today, there's been no prior action on that that's been officially put out by the Assembly.
Okay, just one clarification.
Perfect.
Thank you.
What is that?
Is there anything else?
Yeah, I just want to say congratulations to everybody. I think this has been a good meeting, and look forward to many more of this. There's lots of important business to keep going on, and look forward to seeing you all here.
Thank you. With that being said, I'd like a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second. We'll move for unanimous consent. Is there any dissent for our adjournment? Okay. It's unanimous. 556 and the University Assembly is adjourned. Thank you.
This is a production of Cornell University.